From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Congratulations to Baylor winning the NCAA women's basketball title over Michigan State, 84-62. Next hour, researcher Jay Wiedner looks at prophecy in the apocalypse right here on Coast to Coast. Well, good news for some Europeans, but eventually it could affect us, and it could be good news as well. Tremendous news, they say, for millions of people in Europe who choose to use food supplements following a landmark challenge in the European Courts of Justice brought by the Alliance for Natural Health and Nutrilink to the contentious Food Supplements Directive, which effectively proposed to ban 75% of vitamin and mineral forms. The Advocate General there, the senior advisor to the European courts, gave his opinion in favor of the people. What does this mean out there? Well, the chances of consumers being able to continue using natural food supplements that they believe are beneficial to their health are now greatly increased. There had been an uproar about the proposed EU ban, and maybe against the odds, the consumers look like they're coming out on top on this one. Americans will eventually need passports to re-enter the United States from Canada, Mexico, Panama, and Bermuda by 2008. This is all part of a tightening of U.S. border controls in an era of terrorist threats. Similarly, Canadians will also have to present a passport to enter the United States. Now, until now, Americans returning home from Canada have needed only to show a driver's license or other government-issued photo identification card. I know, having grown up in Detroit, I would go to Windsor across the Ambassador Bridge all the time, once in a while through the tunnel. Very easy to get in and out. Americans returning from Mexico, Panama, or Bermuda currently need only a government-issued photo identification card, plus proof of U.S. citizenship, like an original birth or naturalization certificate. The new rules, to be phased in by January 1st of 2008, were called for in intelligence legislation approved last year by Congress. Longtime ABC News anchorman Peter Jennings has been diagnosed with lung cancer. The network announced today that Jennings, the anchor person of World News Tonight, will begin outpatient treatment next week. He's expected to continue anchoring the news during the chemotherapy to the extent that he can do so comfortably, according to ABC News President David Weston. Thousands of mourners continued to stream into the Vatican for the public viewing of Pope John Paul II while the College of Cardinals met to establish details for the conclave to elect a successor to the pontiff. The election of the new pope will be announced by a ringing of bells in addition to the centuries-old practice of sending up puffs of white smoke. Hundreds of thousands of people on Tuesday waited in line for up to 9 hours to view the Pope at St. Peter's Basilica, where John Paul will lie in state until his funeral Friday. The faithful were slowly winding their way through the streets surrounding the Vatican and through St. Peter's Square to the Basilica to get a very brief glimpse of the Pope, who died last Saturday at the age of 84. Now, Father Andrew Wingate, a Catholic priest who's part of the church through the old Roman Catholic Church, appeared on Coast to Coast last week. And he has been making prophecy, predictions, that this pope was not going to die. We did talk on the program that in the event the pope did pass on, Father Wingate said that he may have to reassess, reevaluate his prophecies that he has made before, and he's made many. He is our guest very briefly right now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Father. Thanks for coming back. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, George.
Okay, the Pope is dead, and that means, I guess, that a lot of the prophecies that you have presented to us, you may have to question now?
Well, I have to. I'm doing some examination on this one. The others, no, because they still fit. Everything else still fits. I'm still having to check out why these other seers, why, when I get all this information from them, that they're so inaccurate, but when they've been so accurate in the past. So it's just like having being from a large family. You got a lot of children, and one of the children comes to you and says, the parents say, go start dinner, and then you do dinner, and then you come to find out that you weren't supposed to do it. They were supposed to do it, or it wasn't supposed to have been done at all. And then you find out the next time they told you that, and the next time they told you that, and you start, after a while, you start saying, well, I can't listen to that kid anymore. So this is where, in the past, they've all been very accurate, and I have to find out why they've received this, because I haven't received anything. I've been in the dark on this, on myself, personally, but I've been standing behind them, and I have always stood behind them.
Now, when this pope, or at least when we got word that this pope had passed on, mm-hmm. for a moment, and I don't know if you've changed or not, and that's why I want to ask you that, you yep. were a little skeptical about whether he was indeed dead or not, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. At first, when I say he's dead, I shrugged my shoulders and said, okay, he's dead. But they kept saying, no, he's not. No, he's not. No, he's not. So I asked them, so, okay, well, then present me with information that I can then get verified somehow to find out what you're saying is true. Because if what you're saying is true, then there really is something going on. And something is going on that is not just a cover-up. This is something that's immense.
Well, let me ask you, will you admit right now that Pope John Paul II has passed on?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Now, the other prophecies, though, the mm-hmm. ones about the Russians and Chinese then teaming mm-hmm. up, coming into the United States,
yeah.
You still are going to stand by these?
Yes. They, all those things, everything still fits.
Okay. Now, our producer mm-hmm. had told me a few days ago mm-hmm. that you thought that what people were looking at was a wax figurine of the Pope.
No. I was talking to her. I know Lisa pretty well, and I was telling her how she was saying, if this were true, then what is that there? I said, well, you know, I was being very hypothetical, and I said, you know, if somebody wants to substitute something for someone else, it's very easy. My guys said, I've been to the London Wax Museum, and I said, there's figures there that are just amazingly realistic. I said, if you wanted to be hypothetical, I said, my gosh, they could do that.
Well,
I don't support the theory.
I'm glad that you agree with so many of us that Pope John the Paul, sadly, has
passed. One thing that really convinces me of it is his secretary. You can see his secretary there, and I saw him again this evening on the news, and you can see the expressions on his face. This is the man who was his closest companion for, 15 years now. And, I mean, he's been basically his son for 15 years. And you look at the expressions on his face and you see how tired, how worn out he is, and how concerned he is with how everything is running and everything's being taken care of with the man that he took care of so personally for so long and so diligently, to where you say, this guy doesn't have an appearance of there being something shady going on. He doesn't have an appearance of fear, you know, and he doesn't have an appearance of deception. So that's one of the main things that tells me, yes, he's dead, and they're wrong, but they keep insisting. I said, okay, well then, you're going to have to present me with something.
All right, so what will you and your other priests who have been part of the prophecies that mm-hmm. you've talked about on this show and on your website, mm-hmm. Trumpeter's mm-hmm. Mission, what will you do to reassess this specific prophecy where you believe this pope was not going to die at this time?
Well, I'm meeting with several of them in a few days, and that's what I have established right now, is a meeting with them so that they can present the evidence that they're considering to be backing what they're saying.
But will you admit now that one was wrong?
I think so. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, very good. Father, keep in touch with us.
I just want to go and check it and find out.
All right, let's keep in touch.
Okay.
That's Father Andrew Wingate. Now, in a moment, our guest for the rest of this hour will be John Hogue. John, of course, is an expert in the prophecies of Nostradamus, but he has also written a book called The Last Pope. And what we're going to talk about will be the prophecies of Saint Malachi. In a moment, John Hogue on Coast to Coast AM. John Hoag writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy. He's considered a world authority in Nostradamus and is the best-selling author of a number of books, including Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, and Nostradamus, The New Millennium, The Millennium Book of Prophecy, The Last Pope and Messiahs, The Visions and Prophecies for the Second Coming. His work has brought him international acclaim. He has been published in 18 languages and sold more than 1 million copies worldwide. In addition, he has appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows on three continents. He is our guest on Coast to Coast. Hello, John. How are you?
Hello, George. I'm doing fine.
Good to talk with you. Thank you for coming back to join us to explain some of this. Tell us a little bit about St. Malachi, first of all. Who was he?
St. Malachi was an Irish saint. From the high medieval period. In the 1140s, he made a pilgrimage to Rome. And on the Ianiculum Hill, he had a vision when he was looking at Rome on the hill. And in that vision, he started in a trance to recite Latin mottos, as the story goes, about 2 to 3 Latin words per motto, and ending with a little coda of a few dozen words. These 111 prophecies are supposed to be, each of these mottos are supposed to be a future pope in the succession of St. Peter unto Judgment Day. Now that John Paul II has died, there are only 2 left on the list before the chastisement, as some Catholic apocalyptists call it, is supposed to take place.
2 on the list, including the one that's going to be named soon?
Yes, the one that will be named at the end of this month. And he will be the second to the last before the list is fulfilled and the final reckoning is supposed to happen.
Okay, tell us a little bit about that then, John. When assuming the prophecy is correct of St. Malachi, we get a pope named at the end of this month, and then one more. So once we have that one last pope, what does that mean when that pope dies?
Well, that's the interesting question, because if it happens that Petrus Romanus, which is who he calls his pope, Peter of Rome, if he dies and another pope is chosen, there's 2 possibilities. It'll be something similar to what I believe people experience in 2012, when time goes on after the Mayan calendar was supposed to nix us.
Right.
And it's very similar to the problem that happens in all end-time prophecies, including all the people in thousands of years who thought the year 2000 was going to be the end of things. It might even reflect on why certain Catholic priests or other sources of your earlier guest have sometimes hard time seeing the end game in a whole procession of prophecies leading up to a big climax. And it's that very question that is the climax to my book, The Last Pope, and that is, what kind of an apocalypse are we really talking about? Are we talking about the apocalypse at the end of this list of the usual way that you and I, most of us, think about the word, which is doom, gloom, destruction, judgment? Or are we going to have an apocalypse according to the way the word was originally meant to mean, and that is enlightenment, revelation? The light coming to the world. Are we going to have the apocalypse that is all too familiar in its direness that we see in expounded by evangelical Christians or even evangelical Buddhists according to their own end time predictions? Or are we going to see something that is more akin to the prophecies of a certain Catholic mystic called Joachim de Fiore, who was a near contemporary of St. Malachi, who basically said that we would enter a period when the church was not needed, that God, it'd be the period of the Holy Spirit, where for 2,000 years people would have a direct connection with God, and there would be no need for a middleman or a priesthood. He said these things back in the 1200s. He said that that the teachings of Jesus Christ went through 3 steps in evolution, or the teachings of God on earth. The first is a 2,000-year period, which he called the Old Testament period. The second is the ministry of Jesus Christ, is the 2,000 years that have led us up to our recent time. And then any time after the millennium, a few years ago, we are to enter what he called the third. And it's like the Father, the age of the Father,
was the first, the age of the Son, and then finally the age of the Holy Spirit. And the way Joaquin Fiore tried to explain his vision was that in the age of the Holy Spirit, we have evolved enough intimacy and love with God that the need for popes and priests and all of this will vanish.
I had heard that Malachi also foretold the day and hour of his death. Is that true?
Yes, he did, and it was All Souls Day. And he had many prophecies that he had was noted for in his day. And the thing that's intriguing about these Latin mottos is they only surface in a physical form, objective form, in the 1590s. And they were sandwiched in a few pages in a very large volume by Arnold Wion that was looking at the history of the Benedictine order. Now, it's interesting because Malachi, he called him a Benedictine, but Malachi is actually a Cistercian, so in the order of monks. But still, be that as it may, in old medieval Latin, these mottos showed up. And what's a little suspicious is that up until the 1590s, they do something which is almost impossible in prophecy. They were 100% correct, or at least you could find an element or a name or a heraldic device or something that of every pope up to that point that could fit with what was being said in these prophecies. Now, if it's a forgery, as there are many forgeries in prophecy, then it should really fall on its face when it's published. You know, it's, there's a lot of great books of late where people say, oh, we've decoded Nostradamus, and then they're published, and then all these wonderful things that they're saying were wonderful were hindsight prophecies that look really fantastic, and then you look at the stuff that's coming in the future, and like in the same case with the Bible Code books, and they don't really do that well because it just is, it's just not what's going on here in accuracy. But what is intriguing about this incident is whoever wrote these, whether it was St. Malachi or a person under the name of St. Malachi in the 1590s.
Because there is some question right?
But the accuracy of these is some of the finest accuracy I've ever seen in any prophetic tradition. I mean, there's always going to be mistakes. There's always going to be changes because things are not written in stone.
Even with Nostradamus.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
And there are many hundreds of Nostradamian prophecies that look like they could have gone somewhere but didn't. And one could argue that they were wrong, but one could also argue that they were alternative futures we did not access in our free choice in the moment to make our future. Now, what's intriguing is that the accuracy of, rather than dropping dramatically after publication, the accuracy still hovers around 80%, which is remarkable for any prophet.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And one of the more intriguing things is it gets more remarkable. The last 36 popes on the list came after the 1590s, and the accuracy of the ones coming after that are far are getting more accurate as they get into our time.
John, can you tell me in Malachi's prophecies, what did he use for the method so that we would know what popes he was talking about or what numbers?
Well, it's a simple case of if you start counting these popes by the pope that came after his contemporary pope, it's amazing how they fit like a jigsaw puzzle into the right places. For instance, you get Religio de Populata, which I was talking about in another show with you, which was Benedict the 15th, which is the time when Christianity lost the most adherents in one short period, all during his reign, with the World War I killing off Christians by the millions, and then 200 million Christians leaving the fold and joining the Bolshevik Revolution. Religion was depopulated. Or you get a situation like Flos Florum, which was for Paul the VI, where his heraldic device was clearly, his Montini heraldic device is being described here, a flower among flowers, one fleur-de-lis, one lily, by two lilies. It's a classic heraldic device, and he's the only one that had that. And he's describing it, and it's in the right number if he's talking about that succession. Or you look at De Meditate Lune, which was John Paul I, the pope, the smiling pope, as they called him in 1978. It only lasted a very short time, less than a month before he mysteriously died. He died on a half moon.
John, so many people want to talk with you about this, the prophecies of St. Malachi and other issues. So stick with us, all right? For the rest of this half hour, John Hogue, our guest. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Indeed it is. Hey, the After Dark CD, just a little bit of time left where you can still pick it up. It's two CDs, 2.5 hours of great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and some classic ghost stories. You can go to the website, afterdarkcd.com, or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. You know, in a past After Dark, I wrote one of my editorials about that wonderful Twilight Zone episode that I just enjoyed thoroughly called I Sing the Body Electric. Well, that was written by our very own Ray Bradbury, genius that he is. And Ray loved it so much, he sent me a letter. Anyway, next week, first hour, don't have the day yet, Ray Bradbury will be our guest here on Coast to Coast. John, the prophecies of St. Malachi. Do we know the time limit of the popes, this one that will be named and the second one thereafter? How long will they reign?
Well, logic would dictate that if you look at the current grouping of potential men for this to be successors, they're all in their late 70s. If they're early 70s, they're considered too young. And if that is a way to gauge what's coming, then what we're seeing here is a repeat of what happened in the late 50s. We're seeing after a very significant and relatively long-lasting pope.
26-27 years for this one.
Yeah, but that's unusual. That's very unusual. But it's also perhaps an aspect of our modern times that people live much longer. I'm sure many of the average life expectancy of most popes throughout the 250-plus men who have been the pope, it's been 10 years.
Well, of course, he was in his late 50s when he was named pope.
But, you know, the longest living beyond St. Peter himself, who was supposed to have been 35, 36 years in ministry, the longest lived pope was in the 19th century. It was Pius the Ninth, who was 36 years. And he was followed by a very sickly man who they thought would be a transitional pope, and he lasted 25, Pope Leo X. So and died at 94. So it's possible that the intention is to get a pope that will be experienced enough to help bridge this amazing 26-year reign of John Paul II. I think it's quite apt that some cardinals are already starting to call him John Paul the Great.
Yes, that's true.
And I think that's appropriate. Whether one agrees or disagrees with what he did, one could agree and disagree with Gregory the Great, Gregory the Fifth. So there are, but he certainly has had a significant change. And what's also he has done is that any pope that is going to come now will have to be media savvy, will have to speak more than one language, will have to be a true international diplomat, and also be very approachable to the people. Gone are the days, I believe, where you will have Pius the XII who rarely even touched another human being, who ate alone. It was very much a hermit pope, unless it was absolutely necessary for him to come out, which is the way most popes had been with the public. But John Paul I actually began this momentum, being the smiling pope, the one who lasted so short a time, and he's followed by John Paul II, who continued to be a very approachable human contacting pope. Now, there's from my contacts involved in the Vatican, there's really a struggle between those who would like to see more independence with the diocese and those who want to continue a more triumphalist, old-fashioned form of overseeing the church from above. And I think that struggle is going to come out in the conclave that should take place around, I imagine, the 16th or 17th of this month.
Well, and you know, they have changed some of the rules for selecting a pope, where if they don't have, they used to have a two-thirds vote. Now it's a simple majority if they can't come to terms, but they have to wait 12 days before they do that. So a lot of people, I would guess, if you don't get that two-thirds on the first couple go-rounds, the majority folks will just simply sit back, wait the 12 days, and then get the pope they want.
It's very hard to hold on to a majority in that kind of situation. But yes, that would be the strategy. I also must add, as I delineated in the last pope, looking at the last 1,000 years of papal succession, it has often happened that a pope who had a very clear agenda, a very clear direction he wanted to take the church, who spent most of his reign picking the people who would pick his successor, more than 50% of the time, the successor is the opposite to the intentions of the pope who picked the people. It's a little bit like what happens here in America when the Congress chooses, or the president of the Congress chooses, a Supreme Court judge, and once they're in the Supreme Court, they tend to be quite independent of whoever political persuasion, and in the case of theological persuasion, this often happens in the history of the popes and the conclaves. So even though some people would say it's a long shot now, a cardinal like Cardinal Martini, who used to be the Archbishop of Milan, who's now residing in Jerusalem, writing books and studying in Jerusalem, is still a potential candidate, as much as the current Archbishop of Milan, which is Teta Masni. It's interesting to note that certain key people, more than often an Archbishop of Venice or an Archbishop of Milan, is positioned as someone who's in the majority bloc that wants to have him as a pope. Consider Cardinal Montini, who during John the 23rd's reign was the Archbishop of Milan. And it was very clear that he was to succeed John the 23rd. And so, you know, I think we're seeing a repetition here. You have this huge reign, a very significant pope, a transition is in place. I wouldn't even, I think it's also highly likely that Cardinal Ratzinger could also be made pope for a transitional. And to get back to your question about duration, because of the age of the popes that are here, it's highly unlikely, logically speaking, that they're going to last as long as John.
No, I agree with that.
And I've been saying in the last pope, I thought that the next pope would be chosen actually 4 years from now. I said that 7 years ago, and I still kind of feel like I would not at all be surprised if we saw a repetition of what happened with John the 23rd, and we have a 4 or 5 years, and then we have a new pope.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go pick it up by going west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How are you doing this evening, George?
Good, thank you.
I'm somewhat shocked at you tonight. You seem to have been somewhat lenient and compassionate with Wingate. He just outright lied tonight in regards. I was listening when he was speaking the other night in terms of the Pope was not dead, and he kept saying that he was the recipient of this information from the angels and from heaven. And tonight he kept saying it was they that had given him the information. And I remember the time when you were dealing with the people that was not honest with you in regards to Lucia, the last of the Fatima prophets, is that, you know, you basically cut him off the air. I thought you were a little too lenient with him tonight. In regards to your guest...
Well, let me quickly answer that and then let you go to your question with
sure,
John Holmes.
Sure.
I'm not about to chastise a priest. He was wrong. His prophecy was wrong. He knows it. You know it. And the whole world knows it. Go ahead.
Okay. And listen, I'm a practicing Catholic, too. In regards to your guest here, he's extremely intelligent. Being a world event psychic, Ratzinger is the one that's going to become the next pope. Also, I would like to ask your guest, Pope Paul II worshipped the Black Madonna, therefore he worshipped the Black Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ. I would like for him to discuss that in two. In regards to Nostradamus' quatrains, they were changed and manipulated in Europe to say that Russia and the United States was going to fight against China. However, Wingate is correct. Russia and China will initiate war against the United States and invade the United States, and those areas are Florida, Minnesota, and Alaska. And I would like your guests to comment on that. And my name is Suleiman from Vancouver, and I'm waiting to get on your show there, George.
Well, if your predictions are right, you just might do it.
All right. A
number of things to cover, I couldn't keep my note writing fast enough. But the Nostradamus predictions have not been changed. There have been copies of the original manuscripts and the original printed publications since they came out. So I know there's been a lot of attempts of late to try to pretend like and create with CGI capabilities on internet some things that were not there, but that's one thing. Second thing is there are many prophetic traditions that look at the possibility of a Sino-Russian alliance against America. So although that may be a prophecy, and certainly it is not a lonely prophecy, there are a whole crowd of seers for 100 years that have been seeing that possibility. That doesn't deny that isn't a good prophecy. Secondly, most of the predictions that talk about a future Sino-Russian war see the targeted areas being on the West Coast, not in Florida, in those areas. But that's for a whole other show. The thing about the Black Virgin for John Paul II, he does worship the Black Virgin. He is a Marian Pope. There was even some consideration for some discussion about whether Mary would be made equal to Jesus as a co-redemptrix, mediatrix, but that didn't happen. Probably too extreme a thing to happen. I don't see in this show what the relationship is with the Black Virgin according to the future.
Okay,
of the
well, Pope. Let's move on then, because we've got a lot of questions.
But I want to say something that is, before it gets lost, it's very, very interesting about what has happened. Pope John Paul II is called in Malachi's prophecies, De Labora Solis, which means the labor or the eclipse of the sun. Of the 111 popes in these prophecies, he is the only one who was born on an eclipse of the sun. a total eclipse of the sun.
And he's going to be buried.
Yes, which is most amazing.
Isn't that strange? Yes.
It is most amazing because I'm thinking, what is the Vatican saying by doing this? Because certainly there are a lot of people who know about the prophecies of St. Malachi. I think it's in the Apostolic Church or Apostolic Palaces, there are ovals that they're very famous that show the images of all the popes that have existed since St. Peter, and there's only two ovals left. There's only room for two more ovals to be filled with a portrait of future popes. Isn't it interesting that we're to the last two in St. Malachi's list,
sure,
and they're to the last two in this? So I'm thinking, what are certain elements in the Vatican trying to say to us? When there are many days they could have picked, Thursday or Saturday, why do they make a point to pick the day to intern him? In fact, in Italian time, when the eclipse starts, it'll be 11:32 p.m. Italian time.
It will darken over the Vatican.
Well, it won't. It's in the South Pacific. But the point that's very dramatic in this is that he will have been entombed by then. Sealed in the tomb by then, probably around that time when the eclipse begins. The man who was born under eclipse dies and is interned under
eclipse.
It
is remarkable.
It is quite a remarkable prophetic success. Then the question has to be, what then did Malachi intend for the eclipse? Is he saying that this is the beginning of the tribulation of the papacy that is so often in Catholic apocalyptic prophecies, that the next popes are in trouble, or is this an eclipse of the church, or is this, in the other medieval sense of the poetic Latin, a death and rebirth for the church through John Paul II's reign? These are the questions we all need to ask and consider.
Wild card line, and we may have to just watch it all unfold, John. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. I had a question. Because the next two popes will have such a media outlet, and they'll be able to get to a lot of people, do you think there's any way that one of the next two popes could be one of the Antichrists?
Well, it is discussed a lot. Also, one has to ask what one man's Antichrist is another man's reformer. I mean, some people thought that John the 23rd in Vatican II was a kind of false pope. Other people thought he was getting the papacy back on track with history and with the evolution of the church and Christ's vision of the world. It becomes theologically political who is a Antichrist and who is actually a reformer. It could very well be beyond the name calling, we may see in the one or the last two popes be revolutionary popes, even more so than St. Malachi intended for John Paul II. Or it could mean that one of them are false. But then it also could mean that if the final pope is elected and we live to see the next two in succession live out their days and be replaced by a third pope, it may very well be that the list ends with the last true pope, and then the popes that follow are questionable. That's another possibility to consider.
Okay, next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on with John Hogue. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Lee calling from Donaldson. There's a lot of talk about there being a black pope this time. And I was wondering, you know, the prophecy says that the black pope is another name for the false pope. So maybe John Paul II is the last pope.
Well, that's an interesting point because there's a couple meanings for black pope. A black pope could literally mean a man from Africa, like Cardinal Lorenzo. I highly doubt it. That it will happen. I think that's unlikely. However, there's another phrase for black pope, and that is usually the head of the Jesuit order. And I find it intriguing that the talk is up about that because Carlo Martini, the cardinal, former cardinal bishop of Milan, archbishop of Milan, is a Jesuit. And it's actually considered one of the big impediments to him becoming a pope. Certainly, he's been called Cardinal Suave. That was his nickname because he speaks eight languages. He's a consummate canon law specialist. However, he is far more liberal than John Paul II. However, as people have been bandying about in the last few days, the next pope is going to have to deal with the many things that John Paul II wouldn't or couldn't deal with, the breakdown, the lack of priests, the pressure to have priests marry and women be priests, and all these issues, birth control, all these issues, for better or worse, are going to bedevil the next pope. And I sometimes wonder if the cardinals who are getting ready to pray and vote for the next pope aren't struggling with this issue of, can we stay rigidly a certain way, or do we have to adapt to these changes? Because it is also a fact that the Catholic Church has existed, the papacy has existed for 2,000 years because it has adapted its dogmas to the times. And so that then makes it a potential surprise that somebody like a black pope, a Jesuit, would be the next pope. Now, if he is more liberal and more progressive than John Paul II, I imagine many conservatives would consider him the false pope.
Well, John Hogue, we're going to have to get you back as soon as they name a pope and get your take on all of this as it unfolds, or at least for you to do a little analysis for us on whoever it may be, okay?
Yes, I'd love to.
John Hogue, his website, hogueprophecy.com, and it's linked up right now with his name on coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, that's very simple as well. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. Now, in a moment, our guest will be Jay Wiedner. We're going to talk with Jay about the apocalypse and some very strange things that he has uncovered. So stick with us. Coast to Coast continues right here, right now.
After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.